Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a getaway Friday, December the 8th, 2023, 19 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned into WGH Talk, and we have got a full day of programming here, and we are going to open up in a big way today. As many of you know, legendary television producer, and that word gets bandied about quite a bit, but this man was a legendary television producer. Norman Lear passed away on Wednesday at age 101. We have an exclusive interview this morning to open up the program with somebody who knew Norman very well, the legendary actress herself, 92 years old at this point, from the Jeffersons, Marla Gibbs. And Norman had quite a bit to do with Marla's career, as you will hear in this interview to start off this morning. I taped this interview with Marla last night, so let's get to it. Marla Gibbs remembering the legendary Norman Lear. This is Scott Spears, and today we remember one of the true pioneers and legends in the world of television and movies, Norman Lear, who sadly passed away on Wednesday at the age of 101. We are joined today by one of my favorite people and an actress who said, by Norman Lear, Norman Lear said this actress's performances gave him laughter that made him laugh in places he didn't know he had places and added years to his life. She's the legendary star of The Jeffersons and 227, one of the best actresses and comedians there has ever been. What a pleasure it is to welcome to these microphones Marla Gibbs. Marla, so good to speak with you. Unfortunate times, but always a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you, Scott.
Marla, how did you hear of Norman's passing?
I woke up and my son told me somebody had called him.
At 101, is it a shock when somebody leaves us?
Not really. Norman was, at his age, it was more than possible that he would make a transition, but I was not accepting it. I thought he would still be here another 4 or 5 years.
You know, Marla, there was something about Norman. He did not seem like somebody who was 100 years old. He seemed younger than that.
Oh, yeah. We all are mentally.
What do you think?
Some of us are older because we don't understand.
What do you think it was about him that allowed him to have that young feeling about him?
Well, the career he decided to have, and who he was in the career, the writer, the creator. So when you start creating subjects, then of course you realize a lot more things are possible. And you don't fall into the regular problems that people have. You don't really recognize and give purpose to them.
You know, Marla, he created so many shows that we all remember. Of course, The Jeffersons, All in the Family, Maude, Good Times, One Day at a Time, just so many. What do you think it was about Norman Lear that he was able to be part of these classic television series?
Well, it was his mindset and his curiosity about what was going on in the world around him, about the people who were not like him. What were their lives like? So he made sure that we saw some of their lives. And through comedy, you can do all of it.
And he certainly created some controversial moments in television history. Of course, Maude had an abortion. There was an interracial couple on the Jeffersons, the Willises, of course, Archie Bunker. He didn't mind showing people other than just the squeaky clean people that we see. He showed everything.
Right, right. And he realized that people loved it.
They absolutely did. Marla, when was the last time you saw Norman or talked with him?
Last time I saw him was at the Emmys when they gave him the Lifetime Achievement Award. I was on the stage with him. Of course, he was at the microphone. I was in the back on stage. But we had just finished doing the Jeffersons Live. So that was later. So actually at his 100th birthday.
What was that celebration like? How was he doing at that time?
He was doing great. I came a few minutes late, and he was in a wheelchair. They were going to push him onto the stage. And he saw me. He jumped out of the wheelchair, and he came over, and we did an interview together. And while the show was going on, everybody who got up and did a tribute to him or a song or anything, he got right up off the chair to shake hands and hug him. And I said, gee, he's moving so much. I said, he's going to need a massage when he gets home. So I told his wife, I said, he's doing so much moving, he's going to have to massage him when he gets home.
And you did have a touching moment with him there. I believe Entertainment Tonight caught that moment on the red carpet where he said that you made him laugh and it added time to his life. What a great thing to say.
It was wonderful. And the fact that no one would even know my name except for him, if he hadn't hired me, people would not know who Marla Gibbs is. And he had definitely added years to my life.
Marla, tell us about the first time you met Norman Lear.
Well, the first time I met Norman was when I was hired to do the Jeffersons. He came and watched the rehearsal and gave his approval and his notes, and we went on from there. And then I would see him all the time.
You know, Marla, he said something interesting. I believe this was at your Hollywood Walk of Fame ceremony. The first episode of The Jeffersons that you were in, there's a scene. People remember it, I think, very well. He recalled it. You had met the Jeffersons, and you thought that they had worked in that building. And when you find out that they lived in that building, the Jeffersons and Mrs. Willis, you had that famous line, How come
we overcame and nobody told me?
And nobody told me. And Norman said he remembered that line as well
that
as he...
That was his favorite line.
Yeah, remembered it as well as anything his children had ever said. You know, what was... When that moment happened, Marla, did you know that was a magical moment?
No, I didn't. I was new to television. I formerly worked in the theater on stage in plays, and television was new to me. Although I wanted to do it, I was a novice, but I came with my own ideas of what I thought it should be and how it should be. So at our table read, I sat at the table when all the other actors got up and let the producers and director talk. I stayed at the table with the producers and directors, so the other actors were a little annoyed. He said, they'll see, if something's wrong, they'll see it. I said, nobody ever says the writing is wrong or the directing is wrong. They say she can't act. I said, they're not going to say that about me. So I stayed at the table, and pretty soon, they didn't ask me to leave because it was a new show. That's what I think. And, after a while, I started interrupting. Excuse me, black people don't talk like that. And it was coming to me that Jewish people, they punch lines, they emphasize each line. And Asian people, they talk very fast over it. Italian people use a lot of hands. And black people just say the line. And they have a rhythm about the way they speak. And that was all coming to me as I was talking to them. But they listened. And when they would write something, I would change the line. If they had Mr. Jefferson at the beginning, I might put it in the middle or at the end, whatever works for my rhythm. So director, after a while, said, yeah, we know, Marty, it doesn't fit your rhythm. But they left me alone because I would get laughs. Sometimes I would get 3 laughs instead of 1. So they left me alone to do it the way I did it.
Yeah.
So it was fun. So I never said mine the way they wrote it, which was annoying to Isabel sometimes because she worked on word cues. You give her the cue, and she knows when she's supposed to speak. I didn't work on cues. You say the line to me, I hear the whole line, and I get the meaning of the line, and I can respond. So she said to me, is that what you're going to say? I said, not if you don't want me to, Miss Jefferson. And then she cracked up laughing.
You know, Marla, that cast of the Jeffersons, Isabel Sanford, Sherman Hemsley, that entire great cast, well, how close were you guys? 11 years it was on.
We were like a family. Roxy and I became very close. Whenever Roxy wanted to do something, she would talk me into it. She decided she wanted to play tennis, and she met the guy who used to coach. And so we went over to the park to play tennis, and all we did was run for the ball because I said, I don't understand why we can't hit this little ball with this great big racket. We kept missing and kept running after the ball. So after a while, we figured that wasn't working. So then she joined Gold's Gym, and she talked me into Gold's Gym. So I started going to Gold's Gym. So we were partners in a lot of things.
Marla, the Jeffersons was on 11 seasons, 11 years. How often was Norman Lear around? He had so many shows going on at that time.
Well, Norman didn't come a lot. I saw him in the hall after the first one, during one of the first seasons. We were having a problem with the show. And I said, I bet Norman could solve this. So I saw him in the hall, and I said, how come you don't come to our show anymore? He said, you guys don't need me. So then he said, why, you want me to come? I said, yeah. So he told everybody to cancel where they were going. He was coming to the Jeffersons. So the producers on the Jeffersons said, Norman Lear is coming. Who invited him? Somebody else said, Marla. I just turned my head. But he came in and he solved the problem right away like I knew he would.
Mm. You know, Marla, the Jeffersons, and I know Isabel Sanford was never particularly happy with this, the Jeffersons was canceled without a proper ending. Did you ever speak to Norman Lear about why that happened or why that...
No, I did speak to... wait a minute. Glenn Padnick was president of the company at that time. I did speak to him. I said, you know, the cast is very unhappy. I said, we got canceled and nobody gave us a proper goodbye. We didn't have an ending show. We didn't have anything. I said, our friends called us and told us we were canceled. So I said, really, it's very disrespectful. So he said, I hear you. Excuse me. So he came up with the idea of giving us a big clock, very fancy clock, engraved. We weren't happy with that. That's all we got.
Mm.
I guess that was better than nothing.
I think a lot of people were very upset when that show went off the air after all those years. But by that time, it's also interesting because your second series, 227, Norman played a part in this as well when it was coming together. You wanted him to come see the play, 227.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He did come see the play.
Yeah.
And I was talking to Columbia. He said, well, what are you doing with this play? I said, I'm talking to Columbia. He said, well, have you signed anything? I said, no. He said, well, why don't you and I do it? I said, okay. That's home. I'm already there. So with that, we went on. But I got very disappointed because he hired two young African-American males to helm the show. And he didn't invite me. I thought you said you and I were going to do it. So, and they didn't agree with anything I wanted to do. So I was very upset. So we had a meeting. And then I told Norman some of my feelings. I said three things I would not do. I would not own the building under any circumstances. I will not have the show without a man, because the public keeps asking me why you don't let me have a man. So they want to see me with a man. I said, and I would like the show to be in California so we can sit on the stoop, because most of the things that happen are outside. So I got everything but the show in California.
When you would have a meeting
the
with...
The two young men were insisting that the network wanted me to own the building. I said, I do not care what the network wants. I love them, but I will not own the building under any circumstances. I said, Norman, I have a love affair with the people because I am one of them. We are the have-nots. We are not the haves. You make me own the building, I don't know what that will do to my character, but I'm not willing to find out. So Norman then agreed, and I said, now, whether you know it or not, when you go home, if your wife is talking to somebody on the phone, she's talking in a normal voice, but the moment you step into the door, she goes into soprano. Hi, honey. How's your day? You hungry? I said, we don't know why we do it, but we do it. All the women do it. Our voice changes when we see the man. So he said, very interesting. I should have had you at the meeting at my house. I said, yeah. So he told one of the young men, go to the network and tell them we're making some changes. And his response was, I can't do that. He said, tell them Norman wants you. This is what Norman wants. So he left very upset, because it was clear that they had a meeting before I got there and that he was expecting everything to go his way. But Norman understood what I was saying, and he agreed. So we had another meeting, and this time Norman didn't come. He sent all the ladies in the company that worked for him. He sent them. And I thought that was interesting. And the young man I was arguing with, he came. So I said to him, did you do what Norman asked you to do? He said, no, I didn't. I said, well, I don't want you to do anything on my show. I don't want you to do a GD thing. And so he said, well, I guess I've been beat up enough. So he got up and he left. So I guess he thought something was going to happen. I did too, but I didn't care at that point. And so Mr. Patnick, the president, called me up. He said, I spoke to the network, and by the way, they're aware of everything you did yesterday. And they said they do not care. They want to work with you. I said, oh, okay. So and then I went to our attorney, which was also Norman's attorney, and I said, okay, let's talk about what if I get a singing gig in Europe. And 15 minutes later, when I was still talking about singing, he said, okay, wait a minute. He said, if I can get you all rights and courtesies and privileges of exec producer, would you take it, or do you just want to do it for the ego? I said, no, I want to do the work. So that's what he got, and I came on. So from that point, I cast the show. I wrote some episodes, and I had a say about everything that went on. Now, if it was my show, that's the way it should be. Not because I'm not a man, So that's what we did.
Now, that's very interesting. So he was somebody who would listen to the people he was working with.
That was my experience. I don't know. I never told him what I was going to do, and we never spoke after that. But the show was a success, so I'm sure he made money. I didn't make any because I agreed to give it up. I had all rights, courtesies, and privileges without the title and without the money. So, but I made it work. They probably didn't expect me to make it work because I had no experience. But God is awesome. God can give you things you don't know you got.
You know, Marlo, that for somebody listening to this, it's very interesting because this would have been 1985, the 227 went on the air.
86.
And you had all the rights and privileges, as you say, but yet you didn't get the money and your name was not listed in the credits. Now, why was that?
And yet everybody knows that I was exec producer, and I don't know how they knew that.
Yeah.
All the young female actors give me credit for opening doors for them. But I have to say that Glenn Patney had my back, and Glenn Patney was right there for me. I said, how come we can't have any black writers? I said, we need some black writers, too, who understand the lingo and the way we speak. He said, I will give you as many black writers as we have white writers. And he did. At that point, I hired 5 writers and their partners. And that was a lot for him to take on and do, but he did. Anytime there was an argument with casting or whatever, he was right there for me.
During the run of 227, did you see Norman Lear much during that?
No, because I'm sure Norman was very annoyed that I did that, but he never spoke of it. And I never spoke of it. And after the show was over, we were together a lot, and he never said anything. Well, he needn't. He made the money. I didn't make it.
So for all those years you knew Norman, the 11 years on the Jeffersons, the 5 years on 227, and your friendship, which went on through his 100th birthday party, you never had a bad word with Norman.
No. No, I read Norman's book, and I understood Norman and where he came from. I understood it. You know people, and you know why they do things, or when you think you know why they do things, then you just allow them to be who they are. And if you can't take it, you don't have to be around them.
When it came to his dealings with you, what kind of man would you say he was?
I thought he was very generous. He was very interesting. He was very loving. But being a businessman in this business, he had partners when he started. It wasn't him by himself. He had 2 or 3 partners. And then when he changed, when they left, he had another partner. And then finally, it was him. So I don't know how much influence they had or didn't have. And that wasn't my business. My business was how to get what I wanted. So I wanted Jack Kay, and they were telling me the network wanted Cheryl Lee Ralph. I loved Cheryl Lee Ralph. I thought she was brilliant. And I loved her in Dreamgirls, but I didn't think she was right for 227. Jack Kay came in and tore it apart. I said, now that's Sandra. And they had to admit she was really good. But they kept saying that what the network wanted. I said, I don't care. That's not what I want. So finally they came. They said, okay, we're going to hire her. But we're only going to give her 7 out of 13 because she's over the top. I said, whatever. But she came on that show and she did every show. She didn't do no 7 out of 13. She did every show. And she ended up getting an Emmy. And I have to say, mostly she was responsible for the hit of that show.
You know, Marla, we're talking about Norman here, but so many people are interested because if you live during the time that 227 was on First Run, Network NBC. There were all those stories about Jack A and the tabloids, and she did end up leaving the series at the end, that you and she did not get along. What was the truth behind that?
I told people, you know, that's publicity. And that's what she bought into it, but I didn't.
So on the set, there was really no falling out or anything like that?
No. No, if I thought she was doing something wrong, I would simply say it. But when we did First Family, she apologized in front of everybody. She said, I'm so sorry, I was selfish. And I had forgiven her. She didn't know I'd forgiven her, but I forgave her. You forgive, but you don't forget, you know?
You know, Marla, it's interesting. I heard a story that when you got your star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, Regina King from 227, and of course, Oscar winner, Academy Award winner, Emmy winner, was very instrumental in this, but that a meeting happened in Norman Lear's office. Was he there for this?
Yes.
Yeah. How did that all come to be?
That was Regina, my daughter, on 227. She thought I should have a star on the Walk of Fame, and she told my daughter, and then she asked for a meeting with Norman, and so we all went and we met with Norman, and Norman signed to nominate me for the star on Hollywood Boulevard. Well, they turned me down. But the next year, Norman was not available, and Regina was in Europe doing a movie. And they said yes. So who can figure that out? So they said yes, they would give me the star.
So that's very... So when
that was a big surprise.
Well, nobody deserves it more than you, Marla. And it's interesting because... So Norman, first time around, nominated you for your star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Yes, he did.
And also spoke at the ceremony when it happened.
He spoke at the ceremony. Not only did he speak, he stayed for the whole thing. He came in for the reception afterwards, sat down and ate, sat at the table with me, and was there for quite a while.
When you have a friendship like this that spans nearly a half century, when you get to a point like that where you're having dinner and you've gotten your star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, what do you sit and talk about? What did you guys reflect back on?
We just enjoyed the event. My grandson had a lot to do with it, with putting it together. And he and his friend had done a video of me singing It's Never Too Late. And that was playing, and he had arranged to film the whole thing that was going, the whole ceremony. So everybody sitting in the reception could see everything that went on. Because they told us you couldn't have people on the street. But that turned out to be a fallacy, because people were everywhere. And they could not control that. So I had most of the people who were invited to go to the reception and just wait for us. And they did that, but they got to see the whole thing while they were at the reception. So I thought that was brilliant. My grandson's friend is named O.G. Singletary, and Tony Singletary was the first A.D. on the Jeffersons.
Oh.
So we were very close. Now, he turned into a wonderful director, and now his son is a director.
Marla, you say you were at Norman's 100th birthday party. What was his mood at his 100th?
He was just happy. He was delighted watching everybody get up and perform and talk about him. And I kept seeing him look over at his wife, and she was smiling. It was a happy night for him.
You know, it was interesting. He did a lot of interviews around the time he turned 100, and he still wanted to work. He still had ideas.
Of course.
Yeah, just didn't stop.
As long as you're here, you got to keep moving. It's never too late. As long as you breathe, and you're still here, it's never too late. If you don't get out of line, you won't lose your turn. But if you get out of line, you're going to lose your turn.
Marla,
that's called faith. You got to have faith in what it is you want to do, and you have to not quit.
And certainly he never did, and certainly you have not. Do you have a favorite Norman Lear memory or story that sticks out over the years?
At one of the first seasons, Norman and I danced at an occasion on the show where we had a celebration. And he would always say, "We got to dance again." I said, "Yeah," but we never did.
You know, Marla, I think about this and I hear all the tributes that Norman has gotten the last few days, which he certainly does deserve. But you knew this man just about as long as anybody in his working career. You shared so many moments together, his 100th birthday, working on the Jeffersons, 227, your star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. He said your actor, your performances and your laughter added time to his life. You say he gave you your start. You wouldn't be here if it wasn't for him. People wouldn't know your name. How are you going to remember this man that you had this long association with?
I'm going to remember him with fondness and love, and especially be grateful for having met him and having had a relationship with him.
What is something that if we didn't know Norman Lear, we wouldn't know about him that you know about him from knowing him personally?
Well, I can't say I knew him personally. I mean, his life was his. We weren't together that way. I wasn't in his life personally. But whenever I met him, it was very warm and very memorable. And I'll always remember that.
And we certainly have to say he definitely changed the world through his work, which will live on forever.
Yes. Yeah. Now, I'm sure he made some mistakes because he's human. And when you're human, you make mistakes. But you forgive.
Marla, there are a couple things I want to talk about with here while we've got you on the line. You have a book coming out. How's the book coming along?
I got to tell you, they're talking about next year. I never knew a book would take this long. I don't know what goes into making it. Then they want to write it, rewrite it so that you're giving things that publishers think are important. Whether you think they're important or not is not important. So I didn't know anything about writing a book. Except I didn't want to write it at first.
What, was there a reason you didn't want to write a book?
Yeah, you want to write about things that happened to you that were not good. Because by now you know why they were not good or why they happened. And you forgave the person, so why are you still talking about it? That was my feeling.
Mm. So at this point, they feel maybe the book will be out next year, but they want to do some changing to it?
No, before they put it out.
Yeah, yeah. So at this point, how do you feel about it?
Well, I stopped feeling anything about it. I said, it is what it is, just let it be.
And at this point, are there any projects you're currently working on?
My daughter is doing a show called Not Dead Yet with Gina Rodriguez. And she had a TV show that I thought was wonderful, but now she's the star of this show, and my daughter is co-starring on it. And I just auditioned for it, so I'm waiting to hear if I got the part.
Do you like going on auditions at this point?
No. But I understand it.
And
so it is what it is. You can't make a decision about whether you like it or don't like it or whether it's good or whether it's bad. It is what it is.
It is.
Everybody doesn't see TV. Everybody does not know Marduk is, despite what everybody else says. Everybody knows nothing. No, there. Nobody knows. No, everybody knows anything.
You know, Marlo, it's interesting we talk about Norman. He lived to 101, more than a century. And we know you're 30, but not too far behind Norman in years. What have you learned in your life? Norman had a lot of wisdom. What have you learned about life that you could pass on to somebody?
That you always keep God in the middle. That you love, that you understand that we're all one, even though we don't look alike and come from different parts of the world. But basically, our real home is the same one. And if we don't forget that we're all one, we can give love and forgiveness, and the world would be a better place. But this, I don't like you because you're Asian or because you're this. It's terrible.
I used to have Ed Asner on a lot, and he talked about how as he got older, even though he'd won all these Emmys and things of that nature, that it got harder to get roles. Is it harder as you get older?
It's not harder. It's just the mindset of people. People put so much on age. That's why I'm 30. And I don't allow anybody to say anything else. It doesn't matter what the numbers are. I'm a spiritual being as well as a physical being. And as a spiritual being, I don't have a time and I don't have an age. So I can vibrate on 30 if I want to. And then God supports me because people call me, like they call me for Grey's Anatomy, and they called me for Days of Our Lives, two shows that I watched that I would never dream I would be on. And I didn't audition. They just called for me. So, and they didn't worry about age.
And they absolutely shouldn't. Marla, at this point, would you ever consider going back to the stage or maybe doing something around the country?
It would be nice, but stage is a lot of work. And no money, honey. I did off-Broadway. I did the Vagina Monologues. And then I learned that Broadway wasn't paying that much more.
Do you ever see a point in your career? Is there anything left you still want to do that you haven't done?
Yes, some more dramatic work.
You know, the dramatic work you've done has been very good, but there hasn't been a whole lot of it, unfortunately.
Well, there has been, but it's the same people.
Yeah.
They started out in it, and they're still in it.
What is it about great comedians, which you certainly are, that allows you to be such great dramatic actresses? It doesn't seem to go the other way always.
No. Well, it depends on the person and what their attributes are, what their talent is, and what their desires are. Then they put the work into it.
Marla, we've got about 4 minutes left here, and it's the Christmas season, which is happy for a lot of people, and sad that Norman left us during this time of year. But what does Christmas mean to you?
Christmas is a time for a celebration, for joy, for family time, to get together with friends, remembering people, to sending cards and giving gifts, and getting together.
You know, Marla, do you have a favorite Christmas memory in your life? Is there something maybe from your childhood or anything that sticks out as a favorite Christmas memory?
No, not really. I didn't really have a happy childhood. But my memory is when I was a kid, when Santa Claus was supposed to come, we'd be in the bed and they would sit right at the bed looking at you to make sure you sleep. And they would stay there until you fell asleep. And so you never knew, you never saw Santa. You don't know when he came and when he left. But you wake up and everything was there. The toys were there.
You know, Marla, it's interesting. You talked about your book there and how people want you to write about things that, you know, don't matter anymore and that are in the past, but were some kind of conflict at the time. Is there something that the public doesn't know about Marla Gibbs?
Oh, that's a whole lot.
Is there something in particular that sticks out?
Not that I want to talk about.
I respect that. Marla, before we let go, I always love to hear you sing. Your song is great. It's Never Too Late, which I think is on the internet. People can view that. If you're walking around the house this year and singing a Christmas song, what kind of Christmas song, which Christmas song would it be?
Well, it's not a Christmas song. It's Never Too Late. It's in my head all the time. And then there's a show that Oscar Brown Jr. wrote called Long As You're Living. And I really like that. I walk around singing that a lot. Mm.
Do you have a favorite Christmas song?
Just the regular ones that we all heard growing up.
Could you give me a little line of one as we part ways here?
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
Yeah. It's a great song.
Yeah, that's a pretty song.
Did you ever sing any of that?
No.
You know, Marla, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and one of the things I want to let the audience know is that you've been coming on my program now for more than 20 years, and in the beginning, I remember...
When I was 10?
That's right. It started... We were both very young in those days. And what I want the audience to know is that I remember when I first started doing shows and we had great guests on, and I said, you know, I really want to get Marla Gibbs on the show. I really want to have her on. And I couldn't find your manager or agent, and there was a problem with that. And finally, the person was located at that time, and you called personally and said, I'll be on anytime you want me to, and we did the most fantastic interview, not because of anything I did, because of how great you were. And in the last 20 years, you set up interviews with Sherman Hemsley for me when he was still with us, and other people. You would come on when people would leave us and remember them. And anytime I've called you, you gave me your home number to call and said, anytime you need me, give me a call, and you've always been there for me. And that's the type of lady Marla Gibbs is. And I want the audience to know that, because I think that's very, very important. Marla, you've been so important to me, and it'll never end, I hope, because you are one special, unique lady.
Well, thank you. I think you're very special, too.
Marla, stay well and have a wonderful Christmas, and I hope we talk again soon.
You too.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The wonderful Marla Gibbs. Legendary actress and star of The Jeffersons and 227, Marla Gibbs remembering her friend Norman Lear, the man who gave her her start in show business, who passed away Wednesday at age 101. We will be back in about 10 minutes. Don't you dare go anywhere.
For the holiday season. For legendary actress and voice of Ursula in Disney's The Little Mermaid, Pat Carroll